recording between Reggie Carter and George Stevenson. This is conducted on Tuesday, June the 14th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Subject of the conversation is last telephone conversation with Dr. Stead. Okay, George, if you want to begin, you talked to Dr. Stead Saturday night. He died either Saturday or Sunday morning, so you probably are the last person that had a conversation with him, and I understand that that took place and lasted about an hour. So won't you just fill me in on the highlights of your discussion?
Okay, Reggie, this is Dr. George T. Stevenson calling you from the Grand Teton National Park. So as I'm giving this oral interview, I'm looking at the Grand, G-R-A-N-D, and that's right where the Jackson Hole, which is, means really Jackson Valley in the west, Piers Hole, Jackson Hole. And I was talking to Gene from the same porch. Actually, we're at Yellowstone Park entrance. He had called me earlier that day, I returned the call, and we talked about many topics. John, who lives with Gene, John's last name is Williams or Johnson, Reg?
I think it's Williams.
Williams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He actually came on the line when I was talking to him and then left the line and then returned the phone to Gene, and we talked for another half an hour. And then Gene actually wanted me to talk to John about another matter at the end of the conversation, but it was getting so late, I didn't. John was bringing some food over and put it on what he calls the bar, and for Gene's vittles, as well as the breakfast next morning. The topics that Gene and I talked about were diverse. I found him totally, totally, totally intact, cognitive-wise, funny, had that wry sense of humor, memory on all details was far greater than mine, and I actually complimented him on, I said, Gene, you're not 94 years old, you're 39 years old. Just like Jack Benny, and he laughed and made appropriate comments, and we proceeded with the conversation. He was actually interested in if I could find some military legacy archive-wise to get some information from the U.S. Army about a Wallace Wade, and it was, he talked about when Gene was heavy on being the chairman of the Department of Internal Medicine at Duke. So he knew Wallace Wade, and I guess there's a Wade Coliseum where they play football. Is that right, Reggie?
That's correct.
And do you know Wallace Wade yourself?
No, he's before my time.
Okay. Gene indicated that he was an artillery officer in World War I. World War II came around, and he wanted to volunteer, and they said, no, you're too old, to this Wallace Wade. Wallace Wade didn't accept this information lightly, and somehow took a test and passed the test, and so he became an artillery officer in the Second World War, had his own regiment, and Gene, I think, sometimes got projects that he had linear vision and carried him through, and this military history was something that had his mind for the last month or so, and he actually told me that he wanted to, there was a student who was called Tobin Lynn, T-O-B-I-N, I think last name is L-I-N-N, and he may have just graduated from the medical school. I'm not sure if he was a fellow or a student, but Gene knew his name and said he worked with Dr. Galen Wagner, WAGNER. Do you know that cardiologist, Rich?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. And so Gene actually wanted my phone number so that he could have Dr. Wagner and Tobin call me, and I had we discussed the Army archives in addition to the Pentagon, and I had some contacts and told him that I'd recently received some good information and actually visited the D-Day Museum in New Orleans. And they're building a brand new World War II museum next to the D-Day Museum, and some of my other contacts. And he actually said, George, why don't you just hold the phone, and I'm going to go get a pencil and paper so I can write your phone number down so I can have these gentlemen call you. But he was gone for about 5 minutes. And came back with pencil and paper, and then I had to go again to find his glasses and wrote my phone number down and the topics that we were discussing. About that time, I heard a man on another line, and actually it was John Williams, having come in the front door of Gene's home, and saw a phone, as John calls it, on the bar right there in the front. And he picked up the phone and asked who it was. I said, it's George Stevenson. And we recognized each other as George Stevenson and John Williams. Talking with, in the presence of Gene Stead, wasn't on the phone, and actually reiterating some of the funny, almost humorous aspects that I think John Williams took Gene Stead to Winston-Salem when we were coming back up through, I think in March. And Dr. Stead always enjoyed giving PA lectures, and I think thought that Reggie Carter had set that lecture up in Winston-Salem. Enjoyed it so much, and John Williams actually drove him to Winston-Salem and drove him back to Honolulu, the name for Gene's estate. That evening, John and his wife Marilyn and Gene and my wife Janice Stevenson and myself went to a restaurant. I can't remember the name of the restaurant. I think the first letter is B. It escapes me now, but anyway, we laughed because Gene did not order an entree or any salad. He ordered four plates of hors d'oeuvres and ate all the hors d'oeuvres. And this gets on with later in the conversation. Gene said, you know, I have always had my special nutrition diet myself, and heavy on fruit, any kind of fruit. Anyway, John excused himself and went back to his home and gave the phone back to Gene, and Gene and I talked for about another half an hour about diverse topics, which I'll go into. He was quite intact, absolutely intact, and I compliment Gene on his thinking. Being 71 myself, Gene 94, and seeing how he could recall all the details, so there was no frontal lobe dysfunction, memory dysfunction. I think his amygdala, corpus callosum, fornix, I think they were all working. I'm just applying some neuroanatomical terms, but he sure had great central nervous system functioning. That wasn't the product of our call, but I made light of it, and Gene responded lightly. He actually said, you know, the IRS are after him sometime. He says, I'm so old, the IRS should be paying me. But rather than me actually having to come up with certain tax returns, I didn't go into what he was talking about, but we both knew what the Internal Revenue Service of the United States was about. Do you have any input on that at all, Gene or Reggie?
No, I don't know what he was talking about.
Yeah. It was a humorous thing about, you know, IRS was still after a 94-year-old man.
Yeah.
He then talked about the Roger Whittaker trial in Redding, California, and said that it was a good outcome. And then Roger Whittaker, who was a Navy corpsman who worked for me in Redding, California, and there are some litigatory events that occurred. I think you have most of those in your mind. Is that right, Reggie?
Yeah, we've got that on tape, and plus the materials that you sent to us have been very helpful.
And I have another box that I'll also send to you.
That's wonderful.
He actually said that was a... there were good lawyers in that case, and he reiterated that that wasn't always the case about his opinion for lawyers. He actually flew from Durham, airport, Durham, to San Francisco Airport, SFO, and he said, you know, that was one of the highlights of his life. He said, excuse my coughing. He flew from a jet across the nation, and when he got to San Francisco Airport, he went into a twin airplane, and not jet, and flew from San Francisco Airport to Reading Airport. And he says, quote, it was a low-flying plane, and one of the first time he could ever see lakes, forests, mountains close at hand. He was usually flying quite high in a jet. He remembered it. Seeing Northern California with the Cascade or the Siskiyou Mountains. He's getting up near Mount Shasta, Mount Lassen, and he certainly enjoyed that. He then actually went into his testimony on the trial, and indicating, along with a, I think it was a Vice Admiral of the U.S. Navy, was the other person to say that the Navy corpsmen were quite well trained to take care of medical emergencies and casualties. Gene was actually hard on his setting up the physician assistant program at Duke as a facilitator, and he said that you sort of remember that he talked to him about how the cow ate the cabbage. And I'm not even sure at that time, maybe the first class of three of physician assistants were graduated, or maybe it wasn't until the next year. But Gene proselyted me and talked to Roger Whitaker, and he and Charlene moved from Redding, California under the invitation of Gene. Gene remembered all the details of that. And when Roger came to Durham and joined, I'm not sure which class he was in, the PAs, but one of the original classes. Actually, Gene remembers him becoming, I think, the secretary of one of the journals, at least by the physician assistance program. Meanwhile, Gene would leave their phone and put it on the desk because Bucky was barking. He put Bucky outside. he talked about Lucy and Nancy and Bill and how they were doing. And he actually wanted to know how my daughter Tricia was. Tricia had taken care of Evelyn, and Gene had this feeling that there were some sort of impulses from outer space, because after Tricia took care of Evelyn at their home, Evelyn never had another nosebleed, which she had been afflicted with before. And neither Gene or George Stevenson had any scientific efficacy of that, and he asked about Tricia was going to make a trans-Canadian race in August 2005, and in June, this June was going to go from the Canadian border, just north of Montana, and go south, riding a mountain bike, a race from the Canadian border to the New Mexico border. He knew all about that, and said that she, Tricia Stevenson must have felt that she was sort of a Lady Lance Armstrong. He remembered all the details of that event and racing and Lance Armstrong. It was amazing. He actually was talking about the fact that the neurosurgeon, he went to the Duke Neurosurgery Department, and basically he actually wanted to know how John was doing, and he was an Eagle Scout and went through that. And we're talking about an hour conversation. He then talked about the fact that George Stevenson got to Oberlin, John, my son, went to Oberlin, and Josh Stommer. Stommer went to Oberlin, son of Frank Stommer. Actually, we still own the home in Oberlin, still do, and Frank Stommer, son, had his graduation reception in our house, and we have pictures of that. Gene Stitt said, you know, I've tried to get all the people that I know to go to Oberlin College and apply because I've heard of the fine things that that college does in addition to the Conservatory of Music, just a fine liberal arts college. He actually then went back to Roger Whittaker, and that said that he had found out that through which avenue, that the Whittakers had called Reggie Carter to get the phone number, and could they release my phone number to Holly Whittaker, who is Roger's daughter. So I informed Gene instead that Holly had actually, subsequent to that call, invited me to be in her wedding party this July 2005, and a really neat, eloquent note to saying that how much Gene Stead had meant to directing the education of her father, Roger Whittaker. And Gene said, what's Roger's daughter's name? I said, Holly, H-O-L-L-Y. And Gene laughed and said, that's a fine name. That's a great name, Holly. Interested in a lot of things, both practical and philosophical. He indicated that sometimes he couldn't make it to the top of the hill from his domicile up to the gate at Honolulu. And so he talked to John Williams about putting a couple stations, sort of like little benches that John could buy at Lowe's and bring and have these two or three benches going up to from the home up to the driveway, and wanted to know where they'd put so he could sit down and rest on the way up. But this is a 94-year-old body heading up to doing some notation. I was the completion of the conversation. I just felt good. Just knowing that gentleman as a friend, as a colleague, as a human being, as a theoretical as well as a practical person, meant a whole lot to me and my wife and my children. Actually, John and Marilyn Williams also, about twice a week, were also thinking about to themselves how much knowing him in their lifetime meant to their general easiness of life. Gene talked about one time he got up and went up and got a tape measure before John and Marilyn were up one morning, and they get up early. So we're talking probably 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Gene Stead goes up to their house and he's measuring the outside of the house. This was so that, he told me, this was so that he could bequeath that this house should be John and Marilyn's for the entirety of their life after he had passed on. Hmm. I don't know whether they put that in a will or a codicil, but...
I'm sure maybe he told Lucy that, too. I hope, yeah.
And he kept reiterating about the physician assistance program and how much it meant to him in terms of this is probably his greatest contribution to medicine, although he was editor of many cardiology journals, put cardiology, if you will, on the computers, and we went to some other diverse topics that I'll probably make some notes of and think about later today and send to Reggie Carter. But hung up the phone, and then actually my daughter was going to go up there. He wanted to basically underwrite her travel on an airline out to Kalispell, Wyoming for the Continental bike trail race, if you will. And I got a call Sunday morning from Lucy, who said that she'd gone up to repair with her husband Kurt some rotten holes around the, I think around the deck or something like that. Prior to that time, John had brought up some fruit and coffee and put it on the counter, and then retired to his house. Lucy went in and didn't see her dad, went into the bedroom and found him probably dead in the covers. She went to John, and John came in, and they saw the notes that Gene had made, his telephone call to me. John inspected his friend and colleague, agreed that they should get medical and coroner's kind of information to the proper people. And then Lucy called me, I suppose, shortly thereafter.
So what time was it that you got this call?
You know, that would have been early Sunday morning, probably the first call she made. She had a lot of calls to make, so
yeah.
I talked to Lucy probably 4 or 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So at your end of it, was it like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock?
I'm guessing, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm batching it this week, Reggie. John is up in Montana with some of these overlords to the grizzly bear research. That was for me. So I have a long honeydew list as well as feed the horses, dogs. So
okay.
I lose time, but it was very early in the morning.
Okay. What was your immediate reaction to that news?
I'm glad I knew Gene's dead.
Yeah.
He had a great life, and I hope Jen and I have a similar life as Gene and Evelyn did. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to stop the tape there. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.